Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
It's not my full-time job. I have another full-time job, obviously. And so I'm coaching at Wilmington because I love the sport and I love the location. I'm not using Wilmington as a stepping stone to something else, a bigger career. You know, it's a fantastic opportunity in my backyard to be able to be a collegiate coach and coach a sport that I love.
And our guest this week is Kim Habert. She is the head women's volleyball coach at Division II Wilmington University down in Delaware. Her program, always one of the top programs in the Central Atlantic Collegiate Conference. And Kim, thanks for taking the time.
Great. I'm excited to join you. Thank you.
So as we are recording this early September, I know you guys are getting ready for the season. Kind of what's the day-to-day with the team? Like, where are you as far as preps and competition and stuff?
Well, you caught us on the eve before we open our season. So we're going to open our season tomorrow up at Molloy University. We have two matches up there, and then we head Saturday to Queens College and play two matches there. We just came back Monday from Puerto Rico. We had the opportunity to go down and play in a preseason invitational style event and play some Puerto Rican teams and had a chance to see how fast they play outside of the United States. Been in preseason basically for 3 weeks now. And we're definitely kind of excited to get in and see what we're going to really do in our competition and playing against some teams within our region. Excited also the fact we're going to get to see how good we really are when we play up against Lynn University, who won the national championship for Division II last year. So it'll be a good test of where we are and where we stand and what we need to work on to get to where we want to be at the end of the year.
Is the trip to Puerto Rico, is this a one-off? Was this a special event, or is this something you guys have been able to do kind of on the regular?
This was just a one-time event for us. We do travel occasionally during the season to try to go some places get us close to home. This particular invitational was designed to give us a chance to play some matches and see some competition we don't normally do. It's an exemption that we can use once every 4 years. So we were able to fundraise, raise some money, go down and spend 5 days, I guess, down. We went Thursday, came back Monday and explore a different part of the country and see some different teams. So it was a special event for us. It's not something we get to do very often, but I think it was really exciting for the kids to be able to have that experience and go play somewhere different.
So getting the opportunity to talk to you on the eve of the regular season opening, do the feelings, are they the same now as they were when you started coaching? Like the excitement, the nerves, or whatever the emotional cocktail is that you experience? Do you feel like it's the same now as it was when you got started?
Oh, absolutely. It is definitely an emotional cocktail, exactly like you described. You know, obviously, I'm super excited to see where we are. Different for us this year, we've got a lot of new players in our gym. We're returning 7 and brought in 9 new players. None of the players in my gym right now have played for me for more than a year. And so it's a great group of young ladies, and I'm really excited to see them play in live competition. As a coach, you're always nervous. You know, you want to see them play their best. You understand that it's early on in the season. You understand that they're nervous, that they're excited, that there's all those mix of emotions that are going into us playing. But yeah, I'm always nervous, but I'm always excited. I know, like, when our season, spring season, stops in April, I'm kind of counting the days to when I know the girls are going to be back in the gym and we're going to be back playing volleyball again. I mean, it's been part of my life for a really long time, and it's something I love doing. So yeah, I'm nervous, but excited, and hoping the chips drop the way we want them to drop for us.
I'm curious, do the feelings you get on the eve of a season, are they the same as a coach as they were when you were playing?
I would say yes and no. Obviously, I don't have control 100% of what they do. So it's a different type of experience, and it's a different type of feeling because, you know, when I was playing, obviously I controlled my own actions on the floor. I could control my play. As a coach, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, however you look at it, I can only offer suggestions at this point. You know, once I put them on the floor, I can give them the suggestions. I can offer them, you know, the tips, the strategies, make adjustments, but I can't play for them. And so I think that makes it a little bit different of an emotional feel. I'm nervous for them, but then I'm excited, obviously, to see them play and see them make adjustments in live play.
And that kind of leads me to a question I ask a lot of coaches who were also very good at playing the sport. You talk about that lack of control. The tools run out once the game starts. There's only so much you can do. How difficult was it when you started coaching, or maybe even now, to cede that control? To accept that I have done everything I can. They need to perform. Obviously, you're going to try to help as much as you can during the thing, but that can be very difficult emotionally for high-level athletes to have to give up that control once they've switched to the coaching.
I would say it's definitely still a challenge. I don't like to lose. No coaches really do. You know, but I have to also trust that these kids have put in the work and that they're giving me their best, you know, and if they're giving me their best, my job is to help guide them, help support them, help give them tips and offer suggestions and hope that they're going to then do what we've asked of them. It is tough. It is really tough because, again, I like to win, but it's not win at all cost. I mean, there's going to be competitions we go into and we might be just outmatched, you know, and if, at the end of the day, I feel like if we can walk out saying we played to the best of our ability, win or lose, then we can be satisfied with the way we performed. And if we walk out of a game or a match saying, hey, we didn't perform at our best, we didn't do what we needed to do, then it's my job at that point to then have us learn from those experiences and make us better the next time by whatever we're doing in our training, working on different pieces to the puzzle, maybe making some changes. You know, I would say with the talent I have in the gym, my lineup is not set in stone. Like, there are kids that are going to develop, young kids that are going to develop and are going to potentially jump into a starting lineup that didn't necessarily start the season in that lineup. But I always say to the kids, you know, there's winners and there's learners, and we've got to, you know, learn from our mistakes if we don't play to our potential, and understand that we may play our best and still not win every match. And if we're playing our best, then we need to walk out with our heads high and be proud of how we performed.
As a coach, volleyball is one of the collegiate sports that I have the least knowledge about. I mean, obviously I know how to play volleyball in the backyard barbecue sense, but the nuance, the details, the rules, I'm not very familiar. So I'm curious, as a coach on game day, how much of an impact do you think you have? Or is the vast majority of your impact practice? And when I say, I mean, as the match is going on, do you feel like there are certain situations where a decision or something you see or communicate to the team can move the needle for points and really have an impact where, I'm sure you would never say this, but you could walk away going, yeah, I probably helped us steal that second set. Do you feel like you can have that type of impact match day?
I do think we can. Ultimately, when we put a lineup out on the floor, we've got to trust in their training. And we've got to know that we've prepared them the best we possibly can. In game, my options are limited. I get 2 timeouts per set. So I can slow the pace down. I can give them a breather if we need to give them a breather because they're just, they need to regain their composure in the match. and then I can make substitutions, but there is a limited amount. So in a college volleyball game, we get 15 substitutions in a set. And there are times we run out. And when we've run out of substitutions and we've run out of timeouts, then the ball is in their court because they're going to have to perform at that time. You know, obviously we're giving kids suggestions of like what shots are open, what could they do differently in a situation, how could they fix something that's happening. But you can't do a lot of training during game. You're really just offering more strategy type stuff in a game type situation. But you got to have a lot of trust in 18 to 22 and 3 year olds in my job.
Now let's talk a little bit about your origin story. Reading up on you, it sounds like volleyball was just one of several sports that you competed and had success at. Am I correct?
You are correct. I grew up as a swimmer. My first athletic career started when I was actually 5 years old swimming. I swam in the Delaware State Championships that used to be held up at DFIT up by the bridge. And part of that was because my mother couldn't swim. So I learned how to swim at a very young age. I spent my entire young life as a swimmer. And I picked up volleyball in high school. I had never played volleyball until I entered ninth grade, which is very different than this day and age. These kids are playing club sports from 10 years old. And then I ran track while I was in high school as well. I competed both high school and then club level at that point in time. I played for a volleyball club. I swam outside of the high school as well. And honestly, I was originally going to college for swimming. So I was going to JMU to swim and decided in March after I completed my senior year of swimming that it just wasn't the sport that I had the passion for anymore. And was fortunate enough to be able to play volleyball down at JMU. I had been in contact with their coach and, you know, she did still have a roster spot for me when I changed my mind. So ultimately that senior year in high school decision probably changed the trajectory of where I ended up. I started coaching at camps and high school right out of college. I was an assistant coach my first year of teaching. I was a head coach my second year of teaching. Spent 10 years in the high school and club world before I got an opportunity to go over to the college world. Fellow coach of mine that was working for the club I ran was now the head coach at Wilmington, and she needed an assistant. She said, "Hey, what do you think about this?" And obviously I'm local to Delaware. My family, everyone's here. So it was a great opportunity for me to jump from the high school world to the college world. Wasn't really what I had planned, but the opportunity kind of fell in my lap. And then she left after a year. So after a year, not even a full year, honestly, it was about 8 months, I called into our athletic director's office and said, "Hey, she's leaving. Well, what do you think about being a head coach? Because right now you're the interim." And interviewed, obviously, and I've been there ever since, you know. And I kind of look at it as an extension to my family and where I am. Like, I love where I am coaching. I love the family atmosphere that's there. You know, I don't look probably very differently than a lot of coaches. It's not my full-time job. I have another full-time job, obviously. And so I'm coaching at Wilmington because I love the sport and I love the location. I'm not using Wilmington as a stepping stone to something else, a bigger career. You know, it's a fantastic opportunity in my backyard to be able to be a collegiate coach and coach a sport that I love.
And I want to drill down more on that transition to Wilmington. But first, I'm curious, what was it, do you think, about volleyball that just resonated with you? I'm sure you had success and you were good at it, but you had success at other sports, obviously. Is there something about the sport of volleyball that you feel like just kind of in your core, it just gets you and you get it, and that has led to all this time and, you know, dedicating much of your life to the sport?
I think ultimately the part of volleyball that's so exciting is that it's a team sport. You know, the difference between volleyball and swimming for me is that although you swim on a team and earn points for a team in swimming, it's a very isolated sport. Like, it's your event, it's your race, maybe some relays here and there. But when you're practicing, there's not a lot of camaraderie at practice. There's not a lot of that team chemistry type stuff. And I think what I fell in love with volleyball is that team concept, that you have to be a team. You can't win by yourself. You can't win a race. You know, you win a match because of everything that's been put together by the group of individuals that's on the floor and the group of individuals that are on your bench. because that excitement, that energy, that support that these kids are getting, you know, I have a roster of 16. I can play 9 in a match usually, or 9 in a set. Like, just that chemistry and that team culture and that excitement and energy, that's the fun part about the sport, I think. And it's constantly changing. It's constantly moving. And I think that's ultimately what I fell in love with and have enjoyed ever since.
Do you think the timing was perfect as well for when volleyball came into your life? Because you mentioned you've been swimming since you were 5. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of swimming. Like, that's a long, you already had a long career as a swimmer, like, by the right. time you get to high school. And I don't mean burnout or anything like that, but maybe you kind of hit a point where you had gotten all you could out of swimming and you were looking for something, and here comes this team sport, and boy, it's at the perfect time. And it comes at the time when you're really just starting to, you know, transition from being a kid into an adult. And boy, it just seems like a perfect marriage at the perfect time, you know, where the swimming got you into athletics, but it just set the stage for you to pursue the one that you really wanted.
Yeah, agreed. I do think that the timing was really great with that. You know, I did love swimming, and I had a state championship in swimming in a relay there, and I finished at states every year in swimming. And I just think that team chemistry that I had built was what I was still looking for. And going to college, like, I went away to college. I went to JMU, not too far away, 4 hours from home, but I was going to a new place. I had one classmate from high school that was going with me. So going to a new place and a new school, a new area, I just think that that concept of team and having friends and support, you know, you're not going to be best friends with every teammate, but you're going to always have teammates that are there to have your back, help you through that transition, be part of that. And just that excitement on being on the floor with them kind of fell all together at the right time. You know, and I look back and I think, wow, you know, I made that decision and look where it's taken me now. You know, like, if I hadn't gone into the volleyball world, I wouldn't be where I am right now. And I just think, you know, things happen for a reason. And obviously at that point in my life, I think, you know, I was ready for something different, and it opened some doors that have, you know, ultimately changed my life and given opportunities like I have at Wilmington and like I've had with, you know, even high school athletes through the years. You know, a lot of the kids that I've coached, whether it be high school, college, club, whatever, are out coaching as well. And so, you know, that once you've been involved in a sport like this, you have impacted other kids, you've impacted their careers, and now they've fallen in love with his support and their coaching. So that part of it's been really exciting, I think, in the sport of volleyball for me. And part of the reason I keep doing it, because I do have a family of my own. I have 2 girls that are both now playing high school sports. So it's a lot of juggling a lot of times. And I honestly do it because of the relationships with the kids that I have at our school, the support I get from the school, and just really the love of the game. And fortunately enough, both of my girls have decided to play some high school volleyball, which they're soccer players. There is their first sport, but they're both, you know, given a run at volleyball as well. And it's fun to see them play a sport that they've watched their entire lives growing up, because both of them were born when I was coaching at Wilmington. So it's something that they've always loved and known, but never had played. So now they're playing as well. So it's fun to share that with them in addition to my college athletes.
As a player, why were you good?
I think work ethic, to be honest. I did a lot during high school. So if you look at your fall volleyball high school season, I was playing on the high school volleyball team and I was swimming competitively for either the at that point in time in high school, I was swimming for Western Wise, you know, travel program. Then in the wintertime, I was swimming for high school. I was playing travel volleyball. I was still swimming for the WISE program. Springtime, still playing volleyball, still swimming and running track. And I think that just that ability to balance and the ability to work hard, I think ultimately is the reason that I ended up where I was. I had great coaches throughout, you know, my high school coach, who I ultimately took the reins from and replaced as a high school coach. Barb Vieira, known for volleyball at the University of Delaware, was my club coach all through high school, you know, just people that know the game and love the game and taught the game and trained you at a very high level, and had high expectations. You know, you set the bar high and you worked hard for it. You had to earn everything you got. And I put a lot of hours into swimming and volleyball, to be honest. There were a lot of early mornings and a lot of late nights through my entire career in high school, and even prior to that a little bit in swimming. And I just think that that's the payoff, you know, is the time you put in and the good coaching that I was fortunate enough to receive.
Was there anything, any skill set from swimming that you feel like accelerated your development in volleyball or made you a better volleyball player? You're not obviously thinking like that when you're, you know, in high school. But when you look back, do you go, huh? Especially now as a coach and, you know, the, kind of the science of the sport and everything, are like, boy, I never would have thought, but the X, Y, and Z, when I used to swim this, that really helped make me into this as a volleyball player. Or is it just you were a good athlete? You were a good athlete and, you know, it worked that way.
You know, I don't think there's a direct skill transfer from swimming to volleyball, but you get a lot of endurance from being a swimmer. Like your body, it, you know, you're training, you're getting a lot of endurance out of swimming. I was a sprinter, so I swim hundreds and fifties, backstroke, freestyle, that kind of stuff. So I think some of that does transfer over. And just being in the pool, obviously, your body's able to train without impact. So I do think it allows you to train. And then when you're obviously on the volleyball court, there's a lot of impact and all of that. So anytime you can train in the water and not have to be on a hardwood floor, I think that helps. So I do think from an endurance perspective and just from being in shape and being able to go those long days, because there were days where I was going three practices between high school and two club seasons, you know, and I just think that, those two sports in connection, being in the water and then being on the floor, definitely complemented one another. So I think, you know, they do go well together in all of that.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Kim Habbard in just a few moments. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now is the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter, say with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HR-V. See dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Wilmington University head women's volleyball coach Kim Habbard. When you think back to your playing career, like what are some of your favorite memories? Are there certain matches or moments that come rushing back, or are many, if not most, of your favorite memories kind of oriented with moments with the team in the locker room, on the bus, stuff like that?
Yeah. I honestly only remember like specific details of a few matches in 4 years of college, but I absolutely remember everything that I got to do with my teammates, places we went, experiences we had. The connection still, like I hadn't seen my college, two of my college teammates in 25 years. We went back for a reunion and it was like, we just picked up where we left off. And I think those are the things. And I tell this to my girls at Wilmington all the time. You're not going to remember every match. You're not going to remember every point. You might remember highlights in that time frame, like big events or big games or big things, but you're going to remember all the other things you did. And traditionally, at the end of the season, I meet with every one of my players and we talk about what was your favorite thing about the season? What do you remember most? What's your best memory? And 9 out of 10 kids absolutely are not referencing a match or a point or a game. They're referencing something that we did as a group, somewhere we went, you know, a fun thing we did and an experience they had along the way. And I think that ultimately, at the end of the day, leaving college with those memories and a friend set that hopefully you're going to be friends with for a lifetime is really what it is about at the end of all of it. 4 years in college goes really quick. Their playing years are going to go really quick. And them walking away with memories that they can hold forever, I think is as important as the wins and losses. I couldn't even tell you my records from college. What were our records every year? Where do we finish? Those kinds of things. I couldn't tell you those things, but I could go back and tell you things we did. Places we went, experiences we had. And even though I don't see them a lot, you know, if I picked up the phone, it is immediately like we have never stopped being together with my roommates and my teammates from college. So I think that those are the things that are probably the biggest memories I have of playing.
I saw when it was referring to your college days, you were referred to as an outside hitter and a defensive specialist, specifically a defensive specialist in volleyball terms for people who, once again, aren't into the nuance of the sport. What does that entail?
So when I originally went into college, so to back up a step from that, I was actually a middle hitter in high school. So I played middle all through high school. I was transitioned to an outside hitter, which is your pin hitters. They're usually a little shorter. And so I transitioned to an outside. So my first 2 years, I played full rotations, which meant I was an offensive player and a defensive player combined in that position. And I'm 5'9", so I'm not a huge player in terms of height. If you watch the game now, they're much taller than I was. And then my junior year, we brought in a 6-foot outside. So height became a difference maker in that decision making. And so I became a defensive player, which ultimately meant that in the game of volleyball, I played the backcourt portion of it. And then that outside hitter came in the front row and played the front row portion of it with the hitting and the blocking. And I did all the passing, digging, diving all over the floor, serving. Now they actually have a position called a libero or libero, depending how you say it. And it's a designated position where that person can actually be on the court all 6 rotations and play as a defensive specialist, basically. But that position didn't exist when I was playing. So, and truly through my career and even after college, I've played every position that there is. So I've played middle, I've played outside, I've played right side, I've set, I've been a defensive specialist, I've been a libero in situations, you know, obviously playing in leagues or continuing with USA Volleyball after my college career was over. So I think that it's given me some experience in all the positions and understanding all the positions to really be able to help the kids that I'm coaching. But yeah, so it's the folks that have to dive all over the floor, make sure the ball doesn't hit the floor. You get lots of bumps and bruises, to be honest, from diving on hardwood floors all over the country. But that's the role that I transitioned into my junior and senior year in college.
And that seems like a position. I mean, that's the dirty work. That's not, you have to have a certain mindset to succeed at that, I would imagine, no?
You do. It is the dirty work. It doesn't get a lot of glamour. And I can honestly say my senior year, so I was an education major, and my senior year, I had a lot of classes that I had to do during the afternoons because I had to be out at schools. So I actually had to put my practice time in by myself with an assistant coach at 6 a.m. during the week when I had to be out at practicums and stuff for education. And that was one-on-one with her hitting at me, serving at me, making me dive, making me run, making me do all those things. So, you know, and honestly, probably made me a better player because I had an hour and a half of just one-on-one with an assistant coach, obviously early in the morning, but because I couldn't be at my full team practice a couple days a week when I had to be out at schools. So, I got to do the dirty work early in the morning, one-on-one. And I can remember the days of she'd bring out a bucket of balls or maybe 25, 30 balls, and it was touch every ball, we're doing it again, you know? And it impacted me. It obviously impacted my work ethic and, you know, made me a better player.
Did you always figure you were going to coach?
Yes, because I went into education, honestly, because that was the full package. I could teach, I could coach. I actually coached swimming my senior year in high school. And through my college days, I was a swim coach as well. I coached summer league swimming. So I had had that experience there as a coach. And I knew that once I started playing that I wanted to be able to coach in high school. I didn't look at college as where I was headed, but I thought teaching, coaching, it all kinds of goes together. And I didn't know what I wanted to do going into school other than, you know, math was my strength. So I went in and I was a math education major and then it afforded me the opportunity to coach as well. And I was coaching as soon as my very first year of teaching, I was an assistant coach up at Brandywine High School. And then that following year, I was 22 years old and I'm a head high school volleyball coach, which I don't think is the norm always, but the opportunities fell in the right places. I came back to my alma mater and I coached at my alma mater and did that for 10 years before going to college. So yeah, it's part of the nature, I think. Teaching, coaching, it all kinds of goes together in working with kids. And I love working with kids, all ages.
So you start coaching, you mentioned, you know, getting that head coach opportunity at 22. Like, that's young. Did you know what you didn't know was every day an adventure as far as what was expected of you? Or did you feel pretty confident? I don't even mean from a success standpoint, like wins and losses, just being a head coach of a program. Did you feel like, yeah, this works, this is right?
Well, I feel like my camp coaching and my college playing definitely put me in a situation where I could be a head coach at a young age. The first year that I was coaching as an assistant, I was helping to run drills. I was running practices under a head coach because, again, I had just come out of the D1 world of volleyball and I could offer new drills and new things to try and things like that. So I was given a lot of freedom as an assistant coach to really kind of develop drills, develop game plans, develop practice plans under the head coach's supervision and then coaching camps. I feel like that experience prepared me to be a high school coach and a head coach. And I did. My first couple of years, our career was really good. We made the state finals a couple of times early on in my career. I had some great, great players in my gym. My first year of coaching with 22, 23 years, getting ready to be 23 years old. And I had six seniors and a freshman that were playing on my varsity squad that I was coaching. And you think about those seniors aren't that far away from me in age, but just the super talent. They respected me even as a young, you know, coach. They respected me, my expectations, and they knew what I knew having played Division I. So I think that that part of it definitely was something that they respected. And that freshman setter actually went on to play Division I at Villanova. My, you know, kid I had my very first year as a head coach, you know, went on and got to play at a high level as well. So yeah, I do think that my experiences in the Division I world prepared me for that. And you had to be strict. You had to be, you couldn't be the friend. Like that was something I knew and I had learned very early on that you have to earn that respect from them. You have to command that respect from them. And if you do, they'll go to the end of the earth for you. And the kids that I worked with in high school, you know, definitely did that. And I still see them. They still come back and visit. I watch them with their families now. I was at a scrimmage not too long ago with my daughter playing at a scrimmage at one of the local high schools. We walked in and there were three parents that were there watching their kids play, and they had all played for me. So it was exciting that we were all standing there watching our daughters play and just those relationships that you've built. Like, you know that you've done the right things in coaching if those kids come back. And if you still have relationships with kids 20 plus years later, you know, and I think that that at the end of the day, like when I decide to close my coaching career at some point in time, those are going to be the things that I have valued the most over the years. The relationships with kids, be it from my high school program, be it from my college program, that I still am connected to those kids. I still have conversations with those kids. They still reach out. They still call. They still show up at different things and different events, alumni games, that kind of stuff. Those are going to be the things that matter the most when the coaching days are over and the clipboard's no longer in my hands. So,
when you start as a head coach or early on as a head coach, is there a moment the first time that you worked on something with a kid and you saw the light go off or you noticed something that the group was doing and you corrected it and it changed the direction of something? Like, was there a first aha moment as a coach where, not that you realized you were good at it, but you were like, this feels incredible to have this type of impact? That does one stand out early on as kind of that first one?
Well, I think probably I was fortunate enough when I, like, early on in my career, like 95, 96, 97, to have three basketball players come play volleyball. Like, they were playing travel basketball, all that. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to give volleyball a try. And to watch those three kids transition from basketball to volleyball and to be as successful as they were, like, we made the state finals. There was a time in my high school career where we were the 15 seed going into the state tournament. We beat the number 2 seed and made it to the state finals. Don't have a state championship under my belt there, but have been to the state finals. And I think just watching kids new to the game be successful. Like, those kids end up being first team all conference volleyball players, you know, and watching them come into a new sport and be so successful. Like, I can think back to those days. I wouldn't say one aha moment necessarily, but like that particular year, us being the 15 seed and beating a 2 seed was pretty incredible. And it was with a group of kids that, you know, not all of them were volleyball players when they walked into the gym. They were doing the same thing that I had done, you know, showing up in ninth grade and saying, oh, I'll give volleyball a try. And not having been a part of the club world that a lot of kids were, you know, at that point in time. So I think those are kind of the aha moments in watching kids. I mean, there's always aha moments with every kid in terms of watching them grow, watching them make that next step, watching them just improve during the course of a season, during the course of a week, during the course of a match. If they make an adjustment in a match, if they find that success, and just kind of seeing their face light up and be like, ah, I did it. I did what you asked me to do. You know, I think those kind of happen a lot in the world of coaching. And you do have to look for them, you know, because a lot of people don't pay attention to them. But just seeing kids develop and seeing them grow in the game and learn the game and compete at a higher level is a big aha moment for your entire career, I think, just looking at those things.
your journey where you start, as you pointed out, you start volleyball like in ninth grade. Do you think that made you a better high school coach because you had, like you talk about these basketball players coming who don't have the background in the game, but you have the patience to mold them because you understand, like, you know, that these kids haven't been bred on volleyball their entire life, that maybe you have an ability to work with them, maybe not get frustrated that they don't have the knowledge because it was how you came into it. And that seems like a unique skill set, specifically at the high school level, that would make you a better coach.
I do think, you know, not having lived this sport my whole life going into high school, definitely. I had to learn a new sport. I had to compete. You know, my freshman year in high school, I was on a JV team. My 10th grade year, I got the opportunity to be a varsity starter. And that is obviously attributed to the patience that my coach, my high school coach and my club coach at that point had in training me as a new athlete, you know. And I think when you're dealing with students or athletes in the high school world and they've never played before, they don't have bad habits. So it's a little easier to start them fresh and build them from the ground up because they haven't developed habits that you then have to correct and change muscle memory in. And, you know, there are some things that you have to retrain sometimes in muscle memory. And if they haven't been trained and they don't have those bad habits, you're really starting from the ground, you know, ground up and training them the right way from day one. And I think that definitely is fun to see with those types of athletes. You know, there is lots of transition from basketball to volleyball, obviously. Like blocking is one of those things that is very similar. And I think that kids that understand multiple sports as well can transition. Like I could say to a kid, actually, it's funny because one of the kids at that point in time was years and years ago, Alina Deladon was playing volleyball for Ursuline. And she played basketball most of her career. Senior year, she's played volleyball, got frustrated because of the blocking side of the game. And my best friend happened to be an athletic trainer that worked with her. And so she calls me up and she says, "Can you tell Alina how to block?" And I was like, "Sure." I said, "Think about rebounding. You know how to go up and grab a ball, right?" She's like, "Yep, I know how to do that. I'm really good at that." I said, "Well, volleyball blocking is the same thing. Go up and rebound the ball. Go up and grab the ball, but you just can't hold on to it. So grab it and make sure your hands are over that. Make sure that that ball drops on their side." And she could translate that from, you know, basketball. It's her world. It's her sport. She's amazing. To a sport that was not her everyday sport. So athletes can use their other sports. And if you know enough about other sports, I wasn't a basketball player, but I knew enough about it to be able to say to them, "Okay, in your world of basketball, this is what you do. Well, in volleyball, we're doing almost the same thing. We just have to do it this way." And they could translate that. They could understand that, you know. And I had great athletes when I was coaching high school here. I had a lot of great athletes that came through. Some that were volleyball players coming in, some that were not, you know. And in a high school, public high school, you got to train the athletes that walk into your gym. You don't get to pick and choose them. You get to, you know, train what you have and hopefully watch them be successful. And we had a lot of very successful years in high school. And then in college, we do get to pick our athletes, but they got to pick you too. So it's a two-way street there, you know, in terms of that. It's a little bit different.
So that was Christiana High School, where you had that about a decade as the head coach. And then you come to Wilmington. How hard was it to leave high school coaching, especially given you'd had so much success?
I will tell you that transition from being a head coach in high school and making that decision to go over was not an easy one, because I did leave five seniors that were going to be going into their senior year that had been with me, that had been part of my program. And that was probably the toughest decision for me to make, to leave kids that I worked with and helped build and build a program around, to make that decision to go across town and coach and be an assistant coach. So I think that was probably my toughest decision in all of it, was just the relationships that I have with those kids and not wanting to let them down, you know, by leaving. And fortunately, many of them, a couple of them, came with me and ultimately came over to Christiana at points in time. There was a young lady that I coached 9 years. Coached her 4 years in high school, and I coached her 5 years in college because she redshirted her freshman year. And there were many other of my high school players that I had the opportunity to then coach over at Wilmington. So knowing that at that point in time, when I was leaving high school, most of the team at Wilmington University were kids that I had coached. At that point, it was Wilmington College. I had coached in some kind of club setting or high school setting. So I knew the kids I was going into. They were familiar to me. I obviously hadn't really worked closely with the head coach other than she coached another team in my club. There were a couple of new kids, obviously. But at that point in time, our team at Wilmington was very much Delaware-based. And so I had contact with a lot of those kids. And it did give me an opportunity to go and coach kids I had coached prior at the college level. So that made it, I think, a little bit easier at that point in time in my career. And, you know, you always spend time second guessing, did I make the right decision? Should I have left those kids? Should I have left high school? Should I have made this transition to college? And ultimately, it looks like I made the right decision because I've been there for a long time. So.
We need to take another break. More with Kim Habbard coming up. But right now, I want to remind you once again that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. It's a great time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features, excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. You can get a new vehicle you'll love if you check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HR-V. See dealer for financing details. And now let's get back to our conversation on One-on-One with Matt Leon. Our guest this week, Wilmington University head women's volleyball coach, Kim Habbard. When you start coaching at Wilmington as the head, when you start as the head coach, was it a lot different than coaching high school? Is it more paperwork, like other things you have to worry about that come across your desk that weren't in the conversation at the high school level?
Absolutely. I think the toughest thing that we had to learn, so when I took on the head coaching job, I did have a large group of seniors, but I didn't have a lot of underclassmen. So the biggest thing in the college world is the recruiting side of it. And so for me, like I had to learn to recruit. And I hadn't, as the assistant coach, I hadn't really been afforded that opportunity to do much or learn much about recruiting. I mean, the head coach left in April. So the recruiting season for us is really kind of January to like May. And so I wasn't real active. She wasn't real, I wasn't included in a lot of that recruiting. I didn't know a thing about recruiting or how to even start or where to start. And I think that that was probably the toughest thing to figure out for me and my assistant, who's now my associate head coach, who's also been with me the entire time that I've been the head coach at Wilmington. He and I had to figure it out. And there were, you know, we had a couple really successful years. My very first year as the head coach was the very first year that we were competing in the CACC for a Division II berth. And we won our conference and had that opportunity to compete in the NCAA tournament. And we were the first school or first team from Wilmington to compete in the NCAA tournament. And so I had those kids for like a year or two after that. But then I had to figure out how to bring in all new kids and learning that recruiting. There were some down years, a couple down years in there until we kind of figured it back out and got into a pattern and a routine. And what tournaments do you go to? Who do you talk to first? How do you navigate a player and their parent? What kind of visit do you have? What do you have to do to make them want to come to Wilmington? Because we're unique and recruiting is probably the toughest thing to do at Wilmington because we don't have that traditional campus. We don't have dorms. We don't have, you know, cafeterias where they eat. We don't have all of that. So these kids are living in apartments. They have to be independent. You know, they have to have roommates and they have to be able to cook their own food and do their own meals and be very independent. And so you, not only do you need to find a good athlete, but you also need to find kids that are 17, 18 years old that can be that independent. So I think there's a lot of challenges in that. And I had to learn that. And then my assistant and I had to figure it out. And it did take us, it was a learning curve for sure. Like the in the gym, the training, the coaching, that part of it wasn't so hard. But figuring out all the rest, that was hard. You know, and you have to do hotels and transportation and just all the other stuff besides just the coaching. And so that was a few years of learning curve. And, you know, a couple down years there and, you know, then we seemed to figure it out and kind of get back up on the right side of things and kind of been there ever since.
How many years, you say a few, like how long do you feel like it took you to get your arms around everything that goes into being a head coach?
I would say 3 to 4 years, maybe five. Like to truly change a program around or truly, you know, take a program to the next level, I think you need 3 to 4 years for that transition. And for us, it probably took 3 to 4 years. I mean, we were fortunate like the first year or so, we still had some really, really good athletes. So we were successful in the first couple of years, and then we had to figure it out. So I would say probably 3 years, 3 to 4 years to figure out how to recruit, what tournaments and all that kind of stuff, you know, and what to say and how to convince families that having your daughter stay in an apartment by themselves and having to be a young adult, not by themselves, obviously they had teammates, but, you know, where they didn't have a parent, they didn't have an RA, they didn't have somebody looking out for them other than me and my assistant coach, you know, that you had to learn how to convince parents that it was okay. And to make parents feel comfortable that we would watch out for them. So I think those were the challenges. And I would say 3 to 4 years it took us to really figure it out and get a good handle on how to be good recruiters. And truly, in our situation, because of the nature of not having our own housing and everything, we are pseudo parents for a lot of kids. You know, if they're sick, if they're in an accident, if they're having a bad day, the boyfriend breaks up with them, whatever. Like, you have to be that parent for them because most of these kids are not from Delaware. And so we take on a lot of more roles than I think coaches that have that dorm style, you know they're getting good meals, you know they're going to the cafeteria. They have an RA, they have adults that are dealing with housing, adults that are dealing with roommate issues, adults that are dealing with all the other things that aren't the coaches. And so we have to be everything to them. They come home at night and they don't know that when the top bolt of the apartment door is locked, but they didn't lock it, that someone's not inside. So who are they going to call? Who's going to show up? The two of us are going to show up, you know, and turns out a maintenance person came in and changed your filters, but they didn't know that. So they're freaking out. I didn't lock the top bolt. Well, nobody else is coming. So it's myself. It's my assistant. I made him go in first, though, just so you know. I said, but I did stand behind him. You're going in first, Ross. So, you know, you check every corner, you check every, and then you find that little tiny note on the table that says, oh, maintenance was here today to change your air filters and your air conditioner. You know, but they're not used to that. They don't know that. And I would never want them to walk into that situation of being afraid or not knowing if someone potentially could be in their apartment or whatever. You know, so you have to be a parent. Like, people ask me all the time, how many kids do you have? I said, well, that's kind of a loaded question because I gave birth to two, but I got another 17 over here. They're like, what? I'm like, I'm a coach. And they're like, oh, that makes sense.
What would you say is your favorite part of being a coach?
Well, I think probably the relationships. You know, the wins and losses are great, but just the relationships that you build with kids and watching kids grow. I shouldn't call them kids because they're young adults, but watching them grow and just watching them grow in the game, watching them grow through college. And then after they're out of college, going to weddings and watching them have babies and watching them come back and grow up into, you know, the young ladies that they've become. I think those are the things that I love the most about coaching and working in this type of a sport. I think those are the things that I probably value the most is just the relationships that you built. You know, at the end of the day, you know, my career will end and I'll have X number wins, X number losses. But does it matter if you haven't built relationships on the way, you know, along the way? And I think that those relationships are something that I really value. And I am a coach. So there's days I love them and there's days I'm not happy with them. But at the end of the day, when we leave the gym, you know, I love the girls I work with. I love the people that they are and having that opportunity to impact their lives and having that relationship with them, I think is really important.
As your college coaching career has progressed, have you gotten better at dealing with losing? Do you feel you've always been pretty good at that? Or has that been a work in progress where you're able to process and put losses behind you?
I think it's been a process. It's been a learning curve for me. I still don't like to lose matches that I should have won. So kids probably don't want to talk to me right after a bad loss. And so you got to find those inspirational messages, you know, to say to them like, hey, we got to learn from this. But I do think what I've learned over my career is to be realistic in our matchups and understanding our matchups and kind of knowing that, you know, we played our best. And at the end of the day, we didn't win and being okay with that. You know, and I think as a young coach, you had to kind of, I didn't know all these teams. I didn't know as much about the college world of volleyball that I do now. And so I'm not a good loser. Don't get me wrong. I don't like to lose and I'm not a good loser, but I think I'm better at recognizing now like matches we should have won versus matches that it really didn't matter. We played our best and it is what it is. And we need to learn from that and move on and make the best of that. And I think I'm better now at reflecting on, okay, well, we didn't lose and we didn't win and we should have won. Why? You know, am I mad after we lose? Absolutely. If we should have won. I think every coach in the world probably has that. But I think over the years, I've gotten better at just being able to reflect on it and come back in the next day and reset. You know, what do we need to do different? What do we need to learn from this? And I don't think when I was younger that as an early on in my college career that I had that ability to say, okay, there's winning and learning. I think back then it was winning and losing. And I didn't want to be on the losing end of it if we shouldn't have been. But I think as I've grown in the game and I've grown it as a coach, I've learned that there's winning and there's learning. And if we didn't play to our ability, why? Why did we play to our ability? What do we need to do better? Was it communication? Was it skill-based? Was it errors? Was it lack of training? Like we didn't train properly for something and we need to do that better. So I think I've learned that through my career. There's going to be losses that are just going to be losses. And it doesn't matter how we play. We're going to need to catch that team on the worst day of their year for us to be in the win column. But if we can go and play that team and we can get in the 20s, we're playing them, we're challenging them, we're making them play, then we're better than we were when we came into the match. Even if, you know, we lost 3-0. That's something that I think I've learned and I'm better at now than I was when I started. So I don't like to lose, but just have it my reality meter is a little different than I think it used to be.
And my final question, someone that comes in contact, either plays against, watches, interacts with your team, what do you hope they walk away thinking about Wilmington volleyball? Like, what do you hope that everyone that sees your program, what do you want them to go away thinking about Wilmington volleyball?
Well, I would hope that the teams we play look at us and say, wow, they're enjoying the game, they're having fun, and they're playing hard. And it's funny that you mentioned this question because I actually got a recruit this year, a young lady that reached out to me. And she reached out to me because of a player on one of my opponent's teams that just graduated. And she was looking for a place to transfer to. And this young lady said, if you're going to transfer, this is the coach you need to reach out to. You need to go and you need to look at her program and see if it'd be a good fit for her. And unbeknownst to me, the young lady had said, I was thinking at one point about transferring. And if I was going to transfer, I wanted to go play for her. And I wanted to be part of that program. So that's what I want people. I didn't know any of that. I found that out after the fact, after I had already recruited this girl and she was coming to me. And I'm like, I think that ultimately in my world is if a kid from another program recommends your program to someone else, that is absolutely the highest mark you can probably get. And just having families and kids that see us play and opponents that see us play and say, wow, like they're having fun. You know, they have a great relationship with their coach. And that's somewhere I would want to be. And I think that, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, that's the biggest rewards you're going to get or the biggest compliment. You know, the biggest compliment came from a kid on another team that played against us for 4 years and respected me enough as a coach and my program and my players to send someone to me. So I think that just says a lot about the girls I work with. You know, I want them to be respectful. I want them to be respected. I want them to have fun. I want them to be, you know, successful in the game, obviously, and enjoy all those moments and have people that look at us and respect who we are and what we're about and how our team and players treat each other and treat their opponents and learning to be, you know, graceful in winning and losing and just being role models for other teams, especially younger kids that come to watch us play, being role models for kids that are watching them perform their sport and get to do what they love.
Kim Habert, thanks so much for the time. This was great.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. This has been wonderful.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One on One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Wilmington University head women's volleyball coach Kim Habert for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a big favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One on One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.